Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Disease hit hard this year, huh?
Yeah. Mother Nature threw the kitchen sink at us. Tar spots, southern rust. We had everything.
I didn't know if my fungicide would hold, but Miravis Neo really came through. Even with that dry spell, our yield monitor did not disappoint.
Seriously?
Yep, and with results like this, I'm sticking with it.
No matter what next season brings, protect your ROI with Miravis Neo. Call your retailer to lock in your supply today. Always read and follow label instructions.
Forget the pressure to overhaul your life. The new year doesn't need a new you. It needs you. Grounded, supported, and ready to grow. Grow Therapy helps you make meaningful change at your pace and on your time. Whether it's your first time in therapy or your 50th, Grow makes it easier to find a therapist who fits you, not the other way around. They connect you with thousands of independent, licensed therapists across the U.S., offering both virtual and in-person sessions, nights, and weekends. You can search by what matters, like insurance, specialty, identity, or availability, to get started in as little as 2 days. And if something comes up, you can cancel up to 24 hours in advance at no cost. There are no subscriptions and no long-term commitments. You just pay per session. Grow helps you find therapy on your time. Whatever challenges you're facing, Grow Therapy is here to help. Grow accepts over 100 insurance plans, including Medicaid, in some states. Sessions average about $21 with insurance, and some pay as little as $0, depending on their plan. Visit growtherapy.com/get started today to get started. That's growtherapy.com/get started. growtherapy.com/get started. Availability and coverage vary by state and insurance plan.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Is the position of this arm relative to the SUV consistent or inconsistent with the original spot that the surrogate in the paint test was standing as it related to the SUV?
It's consistent. We lined it up so it's consistent with that original location so that it would not impact the elbow or the upper arm. So at that position, if there's impact to the arm at 15 miles an hour, it doesn't cause the taillight to fracture. And it's also important to look at the kinematics. If you look at the acceleration data below, that hand and arm is accelerated. The hand's accelerated up to the speed of the vehicle in about 2 to 4 milliseconds.
How long does it take to blink your eye?
250 milliseconds. It takes a quarter of a a second to blink your eye. So this occurs if your hand's hit at 15 miles an hour by a car, it's going to be accelerated up to the speed of the car about 50 times faster than you can blink.
Can we go to the next slide, please? And what are we looking at in this?
So this is lab testing at 17 miles an hour. So the housing and the cover was basically propelled into the forearm of the dummy at 17 miles an hour.
What was the acceleration that was noted on the arm?
So when you look at the arm, the acceleration here is almost 300 G's.
What does that mean just to us?
So, you know, 300 G's, if you look at weight, if you say the weight of the arm is 10 pounds, 300 G's means there's 3,000 pounds of force acting on that arm.
Is that enough to break a bone?
It's more than enough to break a bone.
Is that enough to tear ligaments?
Absolutely, yes.
What about the bones in the hand? Are those stronger or the same resistance as the bones in the forearm? Or are they more delicate?
No, the bones in the hand are, as you can imagine, much weaker because they're much smaller. When you look at the carpal bones, the metacarpal bones, the metacarpal interphalangeal joint, which is basically your knuckles, they are much smaller, and it takes much less force to fracture your hand bones compared to your ulna or your radius.
Let's go to the next slide, please. What are we looking at in this slide?
So this is a 24 mile an hour impact with the arm of the dummy contacting the rear, again, tail light. And it shows you the motion, the dummy suspended, shows you the motion of the dummy and again, the force and acceleration. Now that right video I put in because that's real time video. We've been showing the low speed, but look on the right. This is the actual speed of 24 miles an hour. That's what it looks like if you have your hand out and it's struck by an SUV.
Is the arm accelerated in this, do the same physics apply? Is the arm accelerated up to the speed of the car in milliseconds?
It is, yes. It's all about weight, right? Because you have a 6,000 pound car and you have a 10 pound arm. It's whatever speed that car is going, your arm, your hand, whatever sticking out there is immediately going to get accelerated up to the speed of that vehicle.
The video on the right is in real time. Like you said, it's sped up in milliseconds. Is that right?
That's correct.
Is the Hybrid 3 that's used in this test, is that suspended from above?
The dummy in this test is suspended from above, yes, like a pendulum, barely touching the ground.
Is the dummy connected to the ground in any way?
No, it's just its feet are barely touching.
What would happen if there were forces applied to that dummy that went perpendicular to the travel of the vehicle? What would happen to the dummy?
The dummy would swing out like a pendulum in that direction.
Based on your review of the test that was done, the 24 mile an hour test, were there forces on that dummy that were perpendicular to the car to such that the dummy would swing out or be forced out or be propelled out away from the car?
No, there were no forces from the testing, and it's simple physics. Your center of mass of your body is basically at your umbilicus or your belly button. So in order to move the body, you have to apply a force at that part of the body. If your arm's struck, it's not going to move your body appreciably. All it's going to do, your arm's like a moment arm, it's going to spin you around. Could there be some motion forward or backward if you take a step? Possibly. But the center of mass of your body isn't going to move. You have to get struck by the vehicle to have the body actually move in a specific direction.
Can we go to the next slide, please? What is this showing?
So this is a slow-mo of the overhead from the real time. It was a GoPro that was recording that real time video. And this is a slow motion of that video.
I'd like to ask you a couple of questions. As you see the vehicle contact the arm, what happens to the arm as it's being contacted in those milliseconds where it's being accelerated up to 24 miles an hour?
Well, the arm's accelerated up and pushed away from the body. So whatever part of your arm or body is contacting the car, that's going to be pushed forward away from the rest of your body. So not only is it loading the arm with an impact force as it strikes the arm and the hand. But then it's actually stressing the joints too. It's like ripping your, imagine having a car come and 3,000 pounds of force pulling your arm forward at the elbow, at the shoulder joint. It's putting a lot of force and pressure on that appendage.
What's the G-force for the 24 mile an hour impact?
G-force, let me see exactly.
Could you pause that video for a second?
Sure.
Because I want to ask you a couple of questions about it as well.
Let me see exactly what that G-force was.
Do you need to refer to something?
Yes, my report.
With the court's permission?
Yes.
Thank you.
So at 24 miles an hour for the arm, the acceleration is 302 Gs. And for the hand, it's about 435 Gs.
Does that translate to over 4,000 pounds of pressure?
Well, for the arm, it's close to 3,000 if you say a 10-pound weight. And for the hand, that can be anywhere from 800 to about 1,600 pounds of force acting just on the hand itself.
Understood. Can you back this up a couple of frames?
Sure.
Pause it where I ask you. One more frame back, one more back. Right there. What's happening physically to the arm, to the right arm at the point of impact?
So there is a force on the hand, on the forearm, where it contacts. Now, your arm just isn't gonna hit and the force be distributed evenly across the entire part of the arm. That's not how your arm is actually articulated. Even if it was, again, that's similar to an airbag deployment, where at these levels you would get fractures. But if it hits the hand, now, if Mr. O'Keefe's holding a glass at the time of this impact, think about that. What happens is you're holding a glass. It exposes the knuckles. So if you're holding a glass and your arm's a 90 degree angle and the car comes back and hits your hand, it's gonna strike right on the knuckles. The force is gonna be applied right at that joint. And then it's gonna likely hit along the forearm back near the elbow.
What's the shape of that arm in this still photograph?
Well, it's somewhat of an abnormal shape because the arm should be level with the body. The forearm should be even with the shoulder. But you can see as it gets pushed forward, it's accelerating that forearm away from the arm and the rest of the body.
Does that abnormal shape suggest anything to you in terms of what you would expect regarding the bones in that arm?
Again, there's thousands of pounds of forces acting on the arm. And also on the joint itself, not just the arm or the bones we have to consider and how much force to fracture, but think of the elbow joint and think of the shoulder joint. It takes much less force to dislocate an elbow than it does to actually fracture it.
Did you see any evidence based on your review of the medical records, including your review of the x-rays, any evidence of any dislocation?
There was no evidence or indication or diagnosis of any dislocations or fractures to the arm at all.
Fractures or broken bones at all?
Correct, nothing.
Can we go forward another frame? And at this point, the arm has already been struck and accelerated, is that right?
That's correct.
Do you see the taillight material?
I do, yes.
Okay. It's basically now broken, is that correct?
That's correct. It has now been fractured, yes.
All right, let's go one more frame forward. And the taillight material, did you make note of that in this frame?
I did, yes.
What direction is that taillight material going relative to the vehicle?
It's going forward.
And where is the arm?
The arm has been pushed away. Now, you have to remember, as that arm, if it contacts and fractures the taillight, it's not exposed to the fractured pieces that still exist on the taillight itself, because those pieces that fracture haven't gone anywhere because they're against the arm itself. And then as the arm moves away, the pieces then move with the vehicle.
Are the taillight pieces upon fracture moving at the same speed as the arm upon contact?
That's correct, yes.
Is that a matter of physics?
That is a matter of physics, yes.
Is there any possible way for the broken pieces of taillight to out-accelerate the arm upon contact when the arm's being deflected away from the
It is not. I don't believe it's physically possible. That was not demonstrated in our testing, and I've never seen that demonstrated in any peer-reviewed articles. Now, you can see here, again, also the light and the fragments are being propelled forward. So you also have to consider where Mr. O'Keefe was found. He was found in the yard about 10 or 20 feet from the road. There was no exact measurements. But if you look at the motion of the taillight, it's going forward. Now, if Mr. O'Keefe has to move diagonally to the top left of that corner, and if he's not hit with the center of mass, he can't get to where he ends up before the taillight fragments have already gone forward and been deposited on the ground. Average running speed is like 4 to 6 miles an hour. Even if this SUV is going 10 miles an hour, it shatter, the lights fracture, they're dispersed on the ground, and then Mr. O'Keefe somehow ends up to his point of rest, but you wouldn't find the fragments on him because they've already been pushed forward, come to rest, before he even has a chance to get to where they find him.
Let's go to the next slide, please. What is this slide showing?
So this is just frames taken from that actual video showing the interaction that from the top left, then you go down to the bottom left, and then the top right and the bottom right just shows you the progression of the contact and the movement of the arm.
Is the bottom left frame the same frame that you stalled on just a second ago at my request showing the deformation of his right arm?
That's correct, yes.
Thank you. Next slide, please. And is that just a close-up of the same?
That's just a close-up of the same, yes.
Okay, next slide. And is that a final close-up of the arm after it's been deflected out of the way?
That's correct, yes, sir.
Does this also illustrate what you just described in terms of the trajectory of the broken taillight fragments?
It does, yes, sir.
Do you see any defect at all in the right sleeve of that hoodie?
There is no defect in that right sleeve of the dummy. No.
Was the dummy's sleeve examined following this test, closely examined up close rather than just a photograph?
It was examined and photographed, yes, sir.
Was there any defect in that right sleeve at all?
No defects at all were noted in that sleeve. No.
Next slide, please. What are we seeing here?
This shows some of the photographs taken of the sleeve and the arm to show that there's no defects whatsoever. And it shows the damage to the Lexus. And again, at 24 miles an hour, not only do you get damage to the taillight on the fender there, but you also get damage to the taillight on the liftgate.
Was there any damage on the taillight of the liftgate in the subject SUV?
There was not, no.
Next slide, please. What are we looking at in this video?
And so this was 29 miles an hour with a suspended hybrid three arm.
Was the arm in the relative orientation that you saw depicted in the paint transfer test by Aperture?
It was, and in fact, in this one, there's actually contact. We moved it in so that you would get contact with the elbow and the upper arm as well. So it's in the position after Dr. Welcher moves his elbow in and rolls his shoulder into the taillight cover. We evaluated that position with this test.
And do you see any damage to the liftgate taillight based on this test?
There's extensive damage at this speed, yes.
What about the damage to, what would damage would you expect to see to the arm itself at this speed and in this orientation?
At this speed, I mean, we're talking 4,000 pounds of force on the forearm, and with the hand, 1,400 to probably 3,000 pounds. I mean, well above levels where you would get fractures.
Next slide, please. What are we looking at in this slide, these two photos?
This was the final test that was conducted in using a dummy, and it was impacted at 29 miles an hour, and this was a center of mass impact.
Why was it important, Dr. Rentschler, why was it important to do a center of mass test?
Because if we have an auto pedestrian impact, and you want to see where the pedestrian ends up, you have to evaluate how they were impacted by the car. In order to have the pedestrian move any substantial difference, it has to be hit at the center of mass. Again, it has to be hit at that belly button area to propel the body in a certain direction, depending on the speed and direction. If there's no center of mass impact, how does someone get to the point of rest? You can't correlate a side swipe where the arm gets contacted and say, if someone ends up 20 feet away, there's no way to correlate that that arm impact caused them to somehow move 20 feet away. It wouldn't be as a result of the actual incident. It wouldn't be a result of the impact pushing their body in that direction.
From a physics standpoint, is it reasonable to believe that your arm could be struck, just your arm could be struck as it's out in front of your body, and you could be propelled backward, say 7, 8, 10, 12 feet as a result of that strike?
No, it's not reasonable. That's not physically possible. And you look at the arm itself, and we're looking at talking about the injuries and the abrasions compared to fractures. So if Mr. O'Keefe's arm was hit at 24, 29 miles an hour, what this suggests, and there were only abrasions, what this would suggest is that if the taillight doesn't cover or fracture, you can have your arm hit at 24 miles an hour and you wouldn't have any injuries at all, which from a biomechanical standpoint doesn't make sense. If the claim is that the fractured taillight's the only thing.
So I'm sustaining the objection to that. I'm gonna strike that portion, Mr. Jackson.
Let's go to the next slide. What are we looking at in this video?
So here's the video showing that strike at 29 miles an hour with the center of mass impact to the dummy.
What's the import of this particular test? Why was this important, and what did you conclude following this impact test, the center of mass impact test?
There's a couple of reasons. A, it shows there was extensive damage to the rear of that Lexus. So if you had a center of mass hit, you would have damage to the lift gate, to the fender, to the sheet metal. You would have substantially more damage than what we had in this case. And secondly, which I believe is just as important, it shows the post-impact trajectory of the dummy. So again, if you're struck on the corner by the Lexus, the dummy goes straight back in line with the vehicle. There's no force and no direction to actually cause that dummy to move off into the side of the vehicle. So you can't be hit center of mass with a vehicle going straight back and somehow end up 10 or 20 feet to the side of where the vehicle is traveling.
So in this circumstance, would you expect the taillight material to be distributed straight back in the same center line as the vehicle is traveling?
Yes, absolutely.
Would you also expect the body to be struck and move in the same center line as the vehicle?
Sustained is too far.
Sure. What about the body? What directionality would you expect on a center mass hit?
The body's going to move in the direction that the vehicle is moving. That main direction, that main force, moving straight back, the body is going to move primarily straight back.
Did you reach an opinion or conclusion regarding whether the right arm kinematics are consistent with fracturing the taillight cover and sustaining the abrasions that you saw on John O'Keefe's arm?
I did, yes.
What is that opinion?
My opinion that it is not consistent with contacting and fracturing the taillight cover.
Do you hold that opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty?
I do, yes, sir.
Can we move to the next slide, please? And I could have just a moment, Your Honor.
Sure.
On what do you base your opinion that you just told the jurors?
That looking at the kinematics of the arm, it's inconsistent with the evidence we have with the actual abrasions to the arm, the evidence on the sweatshirt, and that at these speeds, you would likely expect fractures, certainly to the hand, and likely to the ulna and the radius and the forearm, if your hand or arm was struck by the rear of the SUV.
Can we move to slide 48, please? What are we looking at in this slide?
This was a study where they used an impactor and they contacted the dorsal or top part of cadaver hands. And they looked at the force that was exerted and they looked at how many fractures were produced as a result of that.
Did you review scientific literature regarding hand injuries under this sort of impact loading? Is this representative of that?
It is, yes.
Next slide, please. What is this?
So this shows the position, and this is taken directly from the aperture paint test. You can see the position that Dr. Welcher had his hand against the tailgate right at the time of impact. And you can see that corresponds, the contact areas correspond to the areas of the hand that were actually tested in this case.
Next slide, please. What is this showing?
So this shows the forces produced during the test as well as the forces produced during our testing. And maybe the next slide here actually better. If you look at the knuckles, which are the blue middle region, and then the metacarpal bones, which are the lower one. So for the metacarpal phalangeal joint, the knuckles, on average it took 397 pounds of force to fracture that joint. Well, the 15 mile an hour test produced a minimum of 483 pounds. And more realistically, that's just with the hand weight. There's going to be more weight because it's attached to the wrist. More realistically, it's twice that, so it's around 900 pounds of force. But what these tests show is that the force produced on the hand, as represented by the PowerPoint from Aperture, even at 15 miles an hour and likely below that, you would expect to get fracture of the hand bones, of the knuckles, metacarpal interphalangeal joints, and the metacarpal bones if you contacted the rear of that vehicle at that speed.
Did you see any indication in the x-rays you saw or the medical records that you reviewed that Mr. O'Keefe's hand was damaged in such a way that you would expect?
There were no indications whatsoever of that, no sir.
Next slide, please. What are we looking at in this slide?
This was a test where they actually looked at the force on the elbow. So this is a direct longitudinal force against the elbow. Now, there's no indication of exactly the paint test has the arm horizontal, but there's no indication, there's evidence of whether maybe it would be angled or if it's straight horizontal. But even if your arm's angled a little bit at the point of impact, the forces again on the right are what we determined from our testing, and those are minimum. Again, that's just with the forearm. If you include the entire arm, it's about twice that. So even at 10 miles an hour, you're going to have 600 to 1,200 pounds of force acting on the arm.
Is that enough to break it?
That's enough. If you strike the elbow, that's more than enough to actually fracture the different bones of the elbow.
If an arm was hit at that speed with those forces, would you expect the x-rays to show no trauma, no broken bones, no fractures, no hairline fractures?
I would not expect that, no, sir.
Next slide, please. What are we looking at in terms of this slide?
So these are just more articles that I reference, and they look at impact force on the forearm, so the ulna and the radius. It takes, just to have a transverse blow right against the bone, it takes about 1,100 to 1,200 pounds of force to cause a fracture. We're at that level already at a 10 mile an hour impact.
What about a 24 mile an hour impact?
24, we're at 1,400 to 2,800 pounds of force.
Did you see any trauma on John O'Keefe's arm that was suggestive of an impact of that nature, of that size, of that force?
There was no trauma, there were no fractures, there wasn't even an indication on the arm of where it would have contacted the vehicle. So if there's fracture at the taillight, there's going to be a force at that point on the arm where it actually contacts the taillight and causes that, right? There's going to be a force riser to cause that in that damage. There was no bruising, there was no lacerations, there was nothing at the alleged point of contact which would indicate an impact that produces thousands of pounds of force on the arm. No evidence of it whatsoever.
You just mentioned this in your answer, but I want to ask a little bit further. We've talked a lot about bone fractures and ligament damage, etc. What about bruising? In any of these tests, would you expect to see bruising, at least bruising, all over the arm at the points of contact?
Absolutely. Bruising occurs when the blood vessels just below the skin are ruptured. and it causes blood to flow into the arm.
Was there any indication that John O'Keefe suffered even a minimum amount of bruising on his arm at all?
No indication of any amount of bruising whatsoever on the forearm.
Next slide, please. And let's go to the next slide. I think we want to jump to slide 50. What slide are we on? Is that 53?
This is 55.
Let's go to the next slide. There we go. That's what I'm looking for. What are you looking at here?
So this again is from the paint test, and it shows, you know, even as the arm gets pushed in, the vehicle's not in line with the center of mass with Dr. Welcher here. So it's not a center of mass impact. And this is important because we've just looked at the arm, and we've looked at the kinematics and the force and whether that's consistent with what happened and the injuries. The next step is to look at what happens if the arm gets hit. How does Mr. O'Keefe end up where he does in the yard? So that's post-impact movement or trajectory of the body. You have to evaluate that if you want to link all these events. If you want to link the head injury to contact with the car, you have to know what happened in between. You have to know the details. And so the next part was to evaluate that.
Is there any indication in any of the testing that you did or any of the review of the medical records medical records of John O'Keefe, including the autopsy records, all of the autopsy records, the x-rays, and the hospital records, any indication that John O'Keefe was struck center of mass?
None whatsoever. No indication at all that he was struck center of mass.
Do you have an opinion or a conclusion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty about whether he was struck center of mass?
I do.
And what is that opinion?
I don't believe that he was. The evidence indicates that he was not. If he was struck center of mass, imagine that. You're getting hit at the pelvis. You're getting hit on the thigh. You're getting hit at the knee. That, and then the body's being propelled forward. Your arm is actually would get pushed into your body, into your ribs, into your torso. You would have very significant and substantial loading to your body, initially the right side of your body, as that impact occurred. And there's no evidence whatsoever that that occurred.
Switching to a glancing blow, a blow of just the arm, not the center of mass, but just the arm. Do you hold an opinion and a conclusion as to whether or not a glancing blow or a blow to the arm only would propel Mr. O'Keefe 7, 8, or 10 feet perpendicular to the line of travel of the vehicle?
I do.
What is that opinion?
It would not be possible. Our testing demonstrates that. The peer-reviewed articles demonstrate that. I've seen no evidence anywhere in this case that would suggest or even indicate that if you get a glancing blow or a sideswipe blow, that somehow would produce enough force to push you 8 to 10 feet into the yard. I don't believe it's possible. I've seen no research that would indicate that would occur.
Do you hold that opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty?
I do, yes, sir.
Can we move to the next slide, please? And let's go to the next slide. Let's keep going. Okay, what are we looking at in this slide?
So this slide, it's a paper that describes how to evaluate vehicle pedestrian impacts and how someone moves in the projection of that body.
Did you seek to analyze a fulsome understanding of whether it was possible that Mr. O'Keefe was hit on his lower extremities?
I did, yes.
Why did you do that? Why was that important?
Well, because with automobile pedestrian impacts, the lower extremity, your legs, your ankles, your knees, that's the most injured part of the body during autoped impacts. So if he's going to be impacted at that speed, especially at center of mass, there's likely going to be injuries to his leg, to his knee. The bumper lines up with the knee. That's one of the most commonly injured parts, as the bumper pushes into the knee, fractures the tibia, the fibula, or damages the knee joint.
Did John O'Keefe suffer any injuries to his lower extremities suggestive of a vehicle impact?
No, I believe the only injury was a half centimeter abrasion on the outside of the right knee.
Could Mr. O'Keefe have suffered a half centimeter abrasion on the outside of his right knee by being struck by an SUV at 24 miles an hour?
I don't believe so. I don't see how that those kinematics would work.
Sustained.
Do you have an opinion as to whether or not that injury was from being struck by an SUV at 24 miles an hour or somewhere around 24 miles an hour?
I do.
What is that opinion?
I do not believe that injury is consistent with being struck by an SUV at approximately 24 miles an hour.
Do you hold that opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty?
I do, yes.
Did Mr. O'Keefe suffer any other injuries to his legs or his lower extremities other than that small, how big was it? How many centimeters?
Half centimeter abrasion.
That small half centimeter abrasion, did he suffer any other injuries to his lower extremities indicative of being struck by a vehicle?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay. Let's go to the next slide. Taking a look at the photograph on the right, concentrating on that for a second. How did that SUV get in that condition?
That was by striking the dummy at 29 miles an hour, and that was a center of mass hit with the dummy.
Were you able to review photographs of the subject SUV, Ms. Reed's SUV?
I was, yes.
Did her SUV suffer or suggest any kind of damage anywhere close to this?
No, the only real damage was to the outer taillight cover on the fender itself was fractured.
Next slide, please. We've seen this. This is the video that was the center of mass impact?
That's correct, yes.
The photograph that we just saw previous, what relationship does that photograph have to this field test?
That was the condition of the SUV after it struck the dummy here at 29 miles an hour.
Can we go to the next slide, please? What are we looking at in this series of diagrams?
So this is some more recent testing that was done, and this test compared impacts between a small sedan and an SUV, and show it's looking at damage or injury to the legs as a result of this type of an impact. And these impacts are actually conducted at a speed of 24.7 miles an hour. They used cadavers, people who donated their bodies to science, set up the cadavers and struck them at just about 24 miles per hour.
Did this support your opinion and conclusion concerning the lower extremities of Mr. O'Keefe and the possibility that he was hit by an SUV at speed?
It does. If I can go to the next slide, it actually.
Sure.
So this shows you for the SUV, it's the last column on the page there, the last three columns are the injuries associated with the SUV strikes. There's fractures to the pelvis, left knee injury to the ACL, the MCL, fracture of the tibia and fibula. There's extensive damage to the legs of all three of the cadaver subjects that were struck at 24 miles an hour with an SUV.
Did Mr. O'Keefe show any signs of any of these injuries?
He did not, no.
Next slide, please. Is this, what are these photographs and diagrams on the right?
So this was taken from the PowerPoint from Aperture. And so it shows that the medical diagram shows the half centimeter abrasion. And if you look at the picture on the left of the surrogate, you can see, so the bumper would line up from the knee all the way up to the pelvis. So a vehicle at speed of 24 miles an hour, if it impacts that knee or that leg, it's not going to produce only a half centimeter abrasion. It's going to get the leg, and it's going to cause significant damage to the knee and to the leg itself.
When you say from the knee to the pelvis, are you talking about the width of the or the height of the bumper itself being from the knee to the pelvis?
I am, yes.
Would that be the contact area that you would expect if there was even a glancing blow to the knee and the hip?
That's correct. You can see on that picture there where that bumper, the rear corner of that bumper, where the bottom reflector is, it extends from the knee all the way up to the pelvis.
Can we go to the next slide, please? What are these diagrams?
Again, these are just reports, peer-reviewed articles demonstrating that auto pedestrian impacts result in lower extremity injuries and fractures.
Did you review all of these peer-reviewed articles that you've told the jurors about, the academic articles, in furtherance of coming to your opinions and conclusions?
I did, yes.
Did you see any reference in the Aperture report that you reviewed and the PowerPoint slides that you reviewed that the concomitant peer-reviewed articles were sought in the paint transfer test?
No.
Or cited?
There was only one article that was cited in that report with respect to automobile pedestrian impacts.
Did it have anything to do with a paint transfer test?
It did not, no.
Next slide, please. And let's keep moving until we get to the, yes, there we go. What is that slide depict?
So this is the opinions that were offered in the Aperture report. And if you look at the top, number four, it says the totality of the evidence is consistent with the right rear corner of the Reed Lexus, again, impacting John O'Keefe and Mr. O'Keefe striking the rear posterior aspect of his head on the frozen ground. And when you look below that, it basically has the references or the support for those, for that one conclusion.
I'll see you both at sidebar for a minute.
Dr. Rentschler, can we move to slide
70, Mr. Jackson.
That's what I was just looking at. 7, thank you. I wish my eyes were better. Slide 70.
Oh. Let me restart it here.
Thank you. Okay, what are we looking at in slide, this is slide 70, yes. What are we looking at in slide 70, Dr. Rentschler?
So this was the one article that was referenced in the Aperture report with respect to automobile pedestrian impacts. And there was a chart from there that was referenced in the PowerPoint that indicates the head's the most commonly injured body region in pedestrian impacts.
And what significance did that reference have in your analysis?
Well, that's not accurate. This article was written in 1979. And the first modern SUV, the Jeep Cherokee, wasn't manufactured until 1984. So this is an article that's 46 years old that doesn't actually relate to this type of an impact. And that's the only peer-reviewed reference with respect to automobile pedestrian impacts that was cited in the entire Aperture report.
Can we move to slide 71? Do you recognize what's depicted in this slide?
I do, yes.
What is depicted here?
So this was a hybrid. This is the 50th percentile hybrid 3, the same dummy that we utilized. And Dr. Welcher performed a test where
Can I interrupt you?
Sure.
So this ATD, anthropomorphic test device,
yes,
was not a 95th percentile test device?
It was not, no.
The 50%?
It was a 50th percentile, yes.
Is that the same exact sized ATD that ARCA utilized in all of its testing?
It was, yes.
Okay.
And to get the forces on the head, Dr. Welcher scaled the acceleration results based on the weight, which is what I was talking about yesterday. You scale the results from the 50th percentile. That's exactly what Dr. Welcher did in this case.
Is that an appropriate way to adjust for the size of an ATD?
It absolutely is, yes.
Okay. Go ahead.
So this test, what he did, he took a 50th percentile dummy, stood it up, and then let it drop backwards and strike its head on a concrete surface.
Next slide, please. By the way, Dr. Rentschler, did the last slide include a video?
I believe it did, yes.
Can we go back?
Or I'm not sure it's on the slide, though. That's just a screenshot.
I see.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go back to that slide for just a second. I thought this might be the video of it.
No.
So in the lower portion of the center of the screen, you see Dr. Welcher holding the ATD. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Did you review a video of what happened next? This is not the video, but did you review the video?
I did, yes.
Describe for the jurors, since we don't have access to the video, what did you see happen from this point forward?
So Dr. Welcher releases the dummy, and the dummy just falls rigidly backwards, almost like a tree, and impacts the concrete.
Can we jump from your PowerPoint to a video that I have and ask you if you recognize it, with court's permission?
Is the video in evidence?
It's in Dr. Welcher's PowerPoint.
Is it before the jury? Is it in?
It is.
Okay.
Okay. Do you recognize this?
I do, yes.
Does this look like the same screen, basically the same thing that you just took a screenshot of?
It is, yes, sir.
Okay. If we could play the first couple of seconds of the video and pause it. As that video began to play, did you recognize this as being the same video that you reviewed earlier?
It is, yes, sir.
And did you utilize this in coming to your opinions?
I did, yes.
Opinions and conclusions in this case?
I did, yes.
Thank you. Let's go ahead, with the court's permission, can we play the video?
Yes.
Thank you. What did you see? Describe what you saw in this video.
So this is a passive rearward fall of the ATD dummy. So just releasing and let it fall. Obviously, it's a dummy. There's no musculature. There's no response to that dummy. So this is what would happen if a rigid individual just fell backwards onto a concrete surface.
Can we see it one more time, please? I'm going to ask you one other question. I'm going to ask you to take note, doctor, of the impact location. Did you see that?
I did, yes.
What kind of surface is that floor, if you can tell?
That, I believe it indicates it's a concrete surface, concrete floor.
Did you notice if the falling backward like that, the dummy slid across the floor or was propelled across the floor, anything like that?
It did not. It just dropped and angled backwards and hit directly on the floor.
Okay, let's go to the next slide. I'm sorry, if we could revert back to your PowerPoint. And if you could pull up slide, I think it's 72.
Let me, every time we do that, I have to restart the PowerPoint. Okay.
Why did you include this video one more time in your PowerPoint here?
Because, again, this is the pain test, which indicates the position, at least that Dr. Welcher had himself at, to get the impact with the taillight cover. And notice, again, so it's not a center of mass hit. It hits his arm and then he slides by. So if that were to occur, he would rotate or move to the left. So if Mr. O'Keefe did that and somehow ends up falling backwards, rigid, directly onto his head, he's going to have to rotate at least 270 degrees and then stop and then fall directly backwards onto his head. There's no explanation of the kinematics.
Sustain is to the end of that. I'll strike the end.
Do the kinematics support what you just suggested?
Objection.
Sustained is to form.
What do the kinematics support?
Objection.
I'm going to see you at sidebar for just a minute. Jurors will be taking our break. Thank you.
May I continue?
Yes.
Thank you. Dr. Welcher, based on your review of everything... Did I do that again? My goodness. This is Dr. Welcher in the video, correct?
Correct.
All right. I was staring at that. I apologize. Dr. Rinchler, based on your review of the video in which Dr. Welcher is positioned, as well as the drop test that you saw, as well as the discussion of being of the body placement, where you discussed the body placement, do you have an opinion as to whether or not the testing that you reviewed from Aperture is consistent or inconsistent with John O'Keefe being struck by the vehicle, propelled perpendicular, backward, say 7 to 10 feet, and falling straight back onto a hard surface, as in the as depicted in the drop test?
The testing's inconsistent with those types of kinematics or that type of scenario.
On what do you base that opinion, sir?
That's based on the testing that was performed, the evidence available in this case, and the kinematics of how somebody would move post-impact after being struck by an SUV.
Do you hold that opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty?
I do, yes.
Can we go to the next slide, please? May I have just a moment, Your Honor?
Yes.
Finally, Dr. Rinchler, do you have an opinion, or did you reach a conclusion, whether the biomechanical evidence in this matter is consistent or inconsistent with Mr. O'Keefe's right arm being impacted by the subject 2021 Lexus 570, resulting in a backward fall leading to the head injuries that he suffered?
I did, yes.
And what is that opinion?
My opinion is that the evidence is inconsistent with Mr. O'Keefe being struck on the right arm by the SUV and then moving laterally into the yard and falling backward onto the back.
And do you hold that opinion to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty?
I do, yes, sir.
Thank you. That's all I have, Your Honor.
Okay. So now we'll take our break, folks. We'll see you in about 20 minutes.
Please rise for the jury. Jury's right this way.
You are muted.
Session, please be seated.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Brennan.
Thank you. Dr. Rinchler, facts matter, don't they?
They do, yes, sir.
You've said it many, many times, facts matter. Isn't that correct?
I think it was details, but facts matter too.
Do details matter, doctor?
They do.
They're critical, aren't they?
If you want to prove that something happened a certain way, they're critical, yes, sir.
When you were talking to the jury and giving opinions about where Mr. O'Keefe might have fell or not fell, you were discussing where Mr. O'Keefe was lying on the side of the yard, weren't you?
Where he came to rest?
Came to rest.
Well, approximately, we don't know the exact position, but yes.
You said 10 to 20 feet, didn't you?
I believe so, yes.
You said that three times, 10 to 20 feet. Do you think Mr. O'Keefe was 20 feet from the roadway?
Well, from, I think he's maybe 10 feet, but 20 feet is from, if you're hit by the car, you need some distance to travel. He couldn't travel just horizontally, so, or perpendicularly. So it would be at least 10 to 20 feet if you look at the total distance.
You have no idea where the point of impact was in this collision, do you?
Nobody does.
I'm asking you, not nobody.
Yeah,
You, excuse me.
So let, go ahead and ask the question.
Dr. Rinchler, before this jury, have no idea where the point of impact was of this collision, do you?
That's correct. There's no evidence.
Play Exhibit 2, please. When you were giving your estimate, 10 to 20 feet, Dr. Rentschler. Did you ever see this photograph before or part of this video?
I'm sure I have.
Well, when you say you're sure you have, are you guessing or have you seen it or not seen it?
I'm sure I've seen this before, yes.
So you've seen this before?
Yes.
And when you looked at this video, did you look at the street and look at the area where Mr. O'Keefe was?
Sure, yes.
Sure?
Yes.
Yeah. 20 feet, Dr. Rentschler?
The way I explained it to you, yes, sir. 10 to 20 okay. feet.
Details matter, don't they?
They certainly do, yes,
you
sir.
Take that down, please. Did you speak to anybody today before you testify about Dr. Welch's testimony in court?
I did not today, no, sir.
Before today, did you speak to anybody about Dr. Welch's testimony?
I did not, no, sir.
At any point, did anybody discuss certain issues with you today that they said would be particularly important?
I don't believe so, no, sir.
When you began your testimony yesterday, before you even finished your credentials, you began talking about your work with the NHL and how important it was to use a 50% hybrid 3 dummy. Do you remember that testimony?
I did, yes, sir.
And you hadn't even finished your credentials yet. Was it brought to your attention that there was an issue in the testing because you or Dr. Wolf or you and Dr. Wolf chose to use a 50% dummy?
Not at all, no, sir.
In your preparation for your testimony, was it discussed at all that at the beginning you should get ahead of the issue and talk about the 50% dummy?
I didn't know it was an issue, no, sir.
Well, you know that the 50% dummy represents somebody who's 5'9", correct?
Approximately, yes, sir.
Approximately 173 pounds.
171, 172, somewhere around there.
And Mr. O'Keefe, how much did he weigh?
216, I believe.
How tall was he?
He was 73 inches, I believe.
So that is not a representative height and weight for Mr. O'Keefe, is it?
That height and weight, no, sir.
And so if you were making projections or analysis based on limb weights, they would be inaccurate if you didn't make adjustments, correct?
Well, they would certainly, the force on the limb would be less if you use a lighter limb. So if Mr. O'Keefe is heavier than the hybrid 3, and I use a hybrid 3, the forces I calculate would be an underestimate of the actual force acting on his body.
If you didn't make an adjustment, but you relied on the numbers from the test 3, the hybrid 3 dummy, ultimately the conclusions would be off, wouldn't they?
They would be an underestimate, yes, the actual forces would be higher.
And so did you make any conclusions, or did you know that when Dr. Wolf did his tests using the hybrid 3 dummy, he didn't make any adjustments?
What do you mean? What adjustments would he make? You get the acceleration, but the acceleration's not going to change, and that's what we utilize. Then you can scale the weight of the body, but I'm not sure what he would have made adjustments for.
When you looked at the ratio force and mass, if you use a lighter weight, the mass changes, doesn't it?
If you use a light, sure, yes.
And that changes the force equation, doesn't it?
That can, yes.
And so when you were discussing yesterday at the beginning of your testimony about the 50% dummy, had that issue been raised with you?
No, sir, it had not.
You had testified before, hadn't you?
In this case?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
And you knew there was a sequestration order?
Prior?
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't discuss the case with anyone, no, sir.
Well, you didn't discuss it with anybody, you said?
I did not, no.
Before you testified last year, you were receiving information from your employer about issues and testimony in the case.
The party that retained us told us things. I didn't break any sequestration. They were the ones in contact with the court. So it was my assumption that whatever they were telling me was allowed by the court. They were the client. I didn't discuss anything with them or tell them anything, but yes, they told us certain things.
Before you testified under oath last year, you were getting updates from your employer about details of this case, weren't you?
Session, Your Honor. Approach?
Maybe we can approach briefly.
Thank you.
Before you testified last year, you were receiving information, not from the defense, from your employer, about other witnesses' testimony during the event, weren't you?
I don't know if they told us about witness testimony. They told us about certain evidence. I had no contact with the court, with the prosecution, with the defense. I had no idea what was going on. We were retained by a certain organization, and they contacted the court. They were in talks with the court about, I guess, what we could or couldn't do. Anything I got was from that organization.
Voir dire 2, 118, line 15. Did you testify under oath that they did inform me, yes, about testimony and situation and events that came forth in the event that I was not aware of?
I don't know. They told us about evidence. I don't know if it was specific to who testified to what, but they told us certain things, certainly, yes.
What I just said to you, are those your words, sir?
I have no idea. I mean, if that's what's in the record, I assume it is.
Would you agree it certainly helped you prepare?
It helped me prepare?
Yes.
It didn't make a difference to my analysis or conclusions.
Made no difference at all?
It did not, no, sir.
Would you agree it helped you understand what was going on during the trial?
I don't think it made a difference at all, no. It doesn't change the facts that I evaluated or the analysis I conducted or the conclusions I came to.
And so as you sit here today, you are denying that that information certainly helped you prepare.
How did it help me prepare? It didn't change the opinions I offered. It didn't change what was in my report or what I'm opining to or testifying to today. It hasn't changed anything I've ever testified to.
I'm going to ask you a very specific question. I want you to give me a very specific
objection.
So just go ahead and ask the question.
Are you denying that receiving that information certainly helped you prepare?
Honestly, I can't remember. It didn't change my opinion. I don't see how it would help me prepare. I remember there was evidence about trace DNA found that we didn't know before. That didn't change my opinion then. It doesn't change my opinion now. It doesn't have anything to do with my opinion.
Details matter, right, sir?
Details can matter.
Details matter, so let's talk about detail.
Sure.
Are you denying that receiving that information certainly helped you prepare? Are you denying it?
Objection.
I'm going to allow it.
Yeah, I don't think that it did. It's been a year, but certainly it didn't change any of my opinions or what I opined to. It didn't change anything with my testimony.
I'm going to ask you one more time. I'll ask you a different question. Receiving that information from your employer, are you denying it helped you understand what was going on during the trial?
Objection.
I'm going to allow that.
I don't even think that it did. I don't understand that. I understood what was happening. I understood what the theory was. So saying that there's trace DNA doesn't change anything. It doesn't affect what my understanding of the trial was or what was happening or what allegedly occurred.
When you were traveling out to testify last year, you had phone conversations with the defense, didn't you?
I think I had like two phone conversations, two or three.
So that sounds like a yes, you did.
Yeah, there was one right before my qualification, my voir dire, where I talked to Mr. Jackson, and that was it. Other than that, I think it was just planning and scheduling.
Mm-hmm. Was there any discussion on how you could portray yourself as independent?
I don't believe there was.
So you don't believe?
Yeah. There was no need to.
That's not the question. Details matter. Was there any attempt?
So the objection sustained. I'm going to strike that, folks, okay? Questions, Mr. Brennan?
Was there any attempt in your conversations to portray yourself as independent as far as your arrangements were concerned and coming out here?
No, I don't think so, because there was no need to, because it was independent.
When you had conversations with the defense, did they offer to give you transportation, assistance getting here?
They provided a ride to and from the airport, yes.
Did you tell the defense that you prefer to take an Uber so that it would appear independent to a jury?
No, because I didn't take an Uber. I took their ride. If I wanted to appear independent, then I would have taken an Uber.
Did you have a conversation about that you were thinking about taking an Uber?
It didn't even cross my mind, sir.
And then after you testified, did you stay independent?
What do you mean independent?
Have any bias
warring
in you?
Any bias?
Bias, yes.
What do you mean? Did I have any bias?
Well, after you testified, where did you go?
Well, I was waiting for my ride, and to get back to the airport, they had to take other people, and so they were having a lunch afterwards, and they said, come have a sandwich, and then your ride will take you to the airport. So I went, and I had a ham sandwich.
I had a ham sandwich. Did you testify at some point that after you had something to eat, you just stood in the corner?
I did. I sat at a table, ate, and then went over and literally stood in the corner waiting for my ride.
When you sat at the table and eat, did you just eat your ham sandwich, or did more go on?
I ate. People were talking. I really didn't talk much at all.
Did you listen?
Well, certainly, I'm sure I did, sir.
Did you laugh along?
I assume if something funny was said, I probably laughed.
Did you talk about your testimony?
At this point, I don't even remember.
Let me alert you to something. When you were there at the luncheon, did you see a camera crew?
I believe I did, yes, sir.
Filming and documenting, right?
There were a lot of cameras, yes.
You know that you might have been on some of that footage?
That's fine. I could care less.
Okay. So do you think maybe you were talking about the case and their answers and laughing it up a little bit?
I have no idea. Possibly.
You were involved in conversations with the defense attorneys, were you?
What do you mean conversations, sir? I had just gotten done testifying. I was having lunch. Whatever was spoken about at the table, I'm sure I heard.
You know what a conversation is when someone speaks to you and you answer.
Sure.
Did you have conversations with some of these folks?
Sir, I can't remember conversations I had last week, let alone a year ago. So I probably did, but I have no clue what we would have talked about.
Do you remember accolades you might have been receiving because you had given certain answers to the then prosecutor on the case and laughing about the answers?
I have no idea.
Remember?
I can't remember last week what I had for lunch last Tuesday. How would I remember a conversation from over a year ago?
Do you remember when you were having conversations with some of these folks and you were laughing about when the prosecutor asked you about other evidence like DNA, you had a response, well, the physics doesn't change? Remember?
I don't specifically remember that, no, sir.
And how long were you at the table eating your ham sandwich with the folks there enjoying the event? How long do you think that went on for?
I honestly don't know. 10 minutes? How long does it take you to eat a ham sandwich? 10 minutes?
And after you finished your ham sandwich and then you told us you stood in the corner, you got a ride back to the airport?
I did, yes, sir.
Yeah. After you got back to the airport, ultimately your company billed the defense for your time preparing and traveling and testifying?
I believe they did.
Well, you wrote your bills down, didn't you? You wrote your time down?
Well, I don't know who gets billed to it. I think it was actually, I wrote my time down and it was the same time code for the original employer that we had. I'm not involved in billing. I don't know who the bill goes out to. I just put my time in and do my work.
Do you know that the defense paid that though?
I have no idea if they paid it or not.
And then I have a new contract with the defense. Or I should say you have a contract with the defense, don't you?
I assume ARCA does. I'm not involved in that. I don't do any part of the financials. I just do my job.
Do you keep your billing?
I enter my billing every week, yes.
Do you know how much you've been paid so far in this case?
I haven't been paid anything. I'm a salaried employee for ARCA. I have no idea how much ARCA's been paid.
How much has ARCA been paid because of your work so far?
I have no idea. I'm not involved in the financials, sir.
You have no idea how much time, how much compensation your company's going to get for the work that you've done and continue to do on this case? You have no idea.
It's not my concern. It's not my department, so I don't.
Is that it? That's a no?
That's a no, sir.
Now, when you communicated with the defense, did you text it, didn't you?
When?
At any point.
There were some texts, yes.
And at some point there was a court order for you to bring a copy of your text?
I believe so, yes.
But when you say you believe so, details matter.
Yeah.
Do you know whether there was a court order for you to bring your text?
I believe there was, yes.
Did you comply with that court order?
I complied with, yes, with whatever I had.
Did you have any of the text messages?
I don't believe so.
What happened?
Well, there were like two text messages about where I could get my ride and what time. And so after that day, like I do many times, I probably erase those texts.
When you say probably, did you delete the text that you had with the defense last year during the trial?
Again, I had like two texts about scheduling, and I'm sure I deleted them like sometime around that time, like I do with most texts.
Did you ever use Signal?
I did not, no, sir.
Why not?
I have no need to.
Why would you have a need to?
Objection. I'm going to allow it.
I wouldn't have a need to. That's why I said I don't use it.
What's Signal for?
It's for, I think, for encrypted messages.
Do any of your colleagues use Signal to have conversations with their clients?
Objection. I'm going to allow that you're aware.
I have no idea what my fellow employees or cohorts do.
One of your fellow employees is a gentleman by the name of Dr. Wolf.
Yeah.
You worked very closely with him on this case, didn't you?
I've worked with him on this case, yes, sir.
And working with him on this case, were you aware of his habits, of whether or not he used encrypted apps like Signal?
Yes, sir. I'm going to allow it.
I'm not aware of Dr. Wolf's habits, no, sir.
When you worked on this case, when you began, you worked with a gentleman by the name of Mr. Klein?
But Scott Klein is another engineer at ARCA that worked on the case, correct.
And you worked with Dr. Wolf?
That's correct, yes.
You worked as a group?
Well, I mean, we all worked on the project together. I'm located in the Pittsburgh office, and Mr. Klein and Dr. Wolf are in the Philadelphia office, so we didn't physically work together, but we worked on the same project, obviously.
When you first began your testimony yesterday, you said that you were restrained in what you could do. Do you remember that testimony?
I do, yes.
And when you said you were restrained, were you attempting like a preemptive strike because of certain things you didn't do to try to ward off any questions about that?
Objection. Sustain.
Let me ask it this way. Were the rules different regarding your initial investigation for you as opposed to Dr. Wolf?
I don't know that they were. I don't believe they were.
Did Dr. Wolf have free rein to do whatever he wanted?
Objection. Sustained.
Were you given free rein to do whatever testing you wanted?
I don't believe we were, no.
You, though. Were you?
Was I?
Yes. Were you given free rein to do whatever testing you wanted?
I mean, there was budgets, and we had to stay within certain values, so I wouldn't say I was given free rein because I couldn't do whatever I wanted.
Did anybody tell you what tests you could or couldn't do?
I don't think there was a list of specific tests or not, but you would discuss what would be done or what we could do and what the cost of those tests would be.
Were you free to suggest any tests that you wanted to?
I'm assuming I could suggest whatever I wanted to, sure.
Were any of your suggestions denied?
I can't remember. I don't know that they were. I mean, we had a what we were constrained is what the client wanted to know. And so we tailored our tests to do that and tried to keep the budget and the cost of what we did in our analysis down for that very purpose.
Could you have suggested crash tests?
Probably could have suggested whatever I want.
Did you suggest crash tests?
Honestly, I don't know. I mean, it might have been brought up, but pretty sure that would not have been within the budget, so.
I want you to be detailed. I don't want you to guess.
So without that go ahead and just ask the question, please.
Did you suggest doing crash tests last year?
I can't remember. We obviously didn't, but I don't know if that was brought up or not.
Do you, since your memory is difficult.
Sustained. Okay.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second. From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Did you know that parents rank teaching financial literacy as the toughest life skill? That's where Greenlight comes in, the debit card and money app made for families. With Greenlight, you can send money to kids quickly, set up chores, automate allowance, and track spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn how to earn, save, and spend responsibly, while parents have peace of mind knowing smart money habits are being built with guardrails in place. Try Greenlight risk-free today at greenlight.com/trygreenlight. That's greenlight.com/trygreenlight.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
It's time to get organized this new year with Menards. Update your closet system and add style today with Closet Culture. Choose from two closet finishes and four colors of shelf boards to create a functional yet stylish closet solution that matches your home decor. Check out all our Closet Culture closet kits or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com to see all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one. Download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details. Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner. so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Using my GI Bill taught me I can do anything. And seeing me graduate taught my daughter she can too. VA benefits cover tuition, housing, and supplies. Get what you earned. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.